Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett gets nominated for a new job, Ambassador of Luxembourg, what this means for the city. Also, Senator Ron Johnson raises concerns over the vetting process of Afghan refugees after his visit to Fort McCoy. Plus, UW System President Tommy Thompson pushes back against GOP lawmakers trying to take control over COVID-19 policies on campus. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for August 27th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Earlier this afternoon.
Well, J.R., let's first start with big Milwaukee news, right? Every week I feel like we're talking, it's like a slow week at the start of the week, and then things just ramp up. The big announcement in Milwaukee is Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett got the nomination by President Joe Biden to be the ambassador of Luxembourg. So let's just take a look at his nearly three decades of public service. He's no stranger to people in Milwaukee, but even across the entire state. So Barrett, who is 67, like I just mentioned, was nominated by President Joe Biden. And his new position, of course, must be confirmed by the U.S. Senate first, which could take some time. His public service career dates back to 1984 when he was first elected to the state assembly, did some time in Congress, and then ran unsuccessfully a few times for governor, and then has been stuck in the mayor's office ever since. Before we get into what happens next, who might be running for that position, let's just hear a little bit about from Mayor Barrett's announcement when he made this.
Earlier this afternoon, President Biden put out a press release indicating his intent to nominate me to be the next ambassador to Luxembourg. I am honored by the president's actions and humbled by the trust President Biden has placed in me. If confirmed by the Senate, I look forward to the opportunity to serve the interests of the United States and President Biden. As a lifelong Milwaukeean, I will bring the values of our community to this new posting. Values we share such as hard work, honesty, and caring for others. In the period between my nomination and final Senate consideration, I will continue to focus my full attention on mayoral duties, my obligations to the people of this great city.
Now, JR, let's get into a little bit about what happens next. Of course, Mayor Barrett will eventually have to resign when he accepts the position and if he, of course, is confirmed by the U.S. Senate. But let's just even think about the people who are potentially thinking of a run. We've heard some few that have already thrown their hat into the ring for his seat. I guess, you know, there was a lot of mixed emotions about him leaving. Some people were happy. Some people are sad to see him go. But he's, like I said, over three decades. Do you think he was ready for something new?
Well, I kind of chuckled when you said he was been stuck in the mayor's office for a while because there have been rumors about Mayor Barrett wanting to do something else for a long time. And rumors about him being appointed to something in administration for a long time. He's 67. He's been mayor since 2004. There's a question of what was the big, bold thing he was going to do next, right? So he landed the national convention ahead of this last reelection bid, right? So that was kind of a big thing. Saw it through, though it became a virtual convention. So what was going to be next for the rest of this term? And there's not really a clear picture of like what Barrett might do differently or do to kind of put an exclamation point on his term. So we thought this might be the last one, no matter what, as mayor. Now the question becomes, who wants to lead Milwaukee and who's best suited to lead Milwaukee? Is it time for radical change or some kind of big, bold visionary to come in and kind of take the next step with the city?
And there's a lot of names being thrown out there, a lot of people who have also attempted to run against Barrett in the past. I mean, does anyone right now have an upper hand, do you think?
No, but Cavalier Johnson, the council president, he gets a leg up in some ways because he becomes acting mayor. So let's work out the assumption that Barrett gets confirmed, right? He gets confirmed. Johnson becomes acting mayor, interim mayor, I should say. There is a special election we called as soon as possible. Now the question is, what's as soon as possible? So you could line it up with the spring election. We have a February primary and April general election. You'd have to have him confirmed by, let's say, late November, early December for that to happen. I mean, we're just trying rough timelines here.
Right.
That's kind of tight. I know it seems like a long time. It's U.S. Senate. It operates kind of slowly sometimes. If not by then what is it? In the summertime, or you line up with the fall election next year, which could be a different dynamic altogether for those who are running. Even so, especially like for a guy like State Rep Dan Reamer, right? For Daniel Reamer, if he were to run in spring, it's a free shot. Mm-hmm. If he runs next fall, he'd have to give up an assembly seat to run for mayor. Now, when I talked to him, he said that's not really a concern for him. He loved the mayor of Milwaukee. But that's an added dimension for people looking at it, like what it would mean for the current position, because you are taking a risk by running for something else.
And a lot of people think that he might be leaving right away, but that's not really the reality. I mean, President Biden's first U.S. ambassador just got confirmed on August 11th, 6 months. Yeah. And we know the politics that play into when it comes to nominations and confirming them through the process. Plus, Barrett, you know, he still has to go through hearings. He still has to, the vote even has to be scheduled. So not saying that he won't get there. The timeline is just way, we have no idea. I've been told estimates by experts anywhere the minimum 6 months, but who knows, right?
That makes that spring window really tight. Mm-hmm. So again, the fall, it would make a different dynamic for some people, but also for local officials, the fall is actually better, because if you're somebody who's up for a common council term, right, in April, you get a free shot in November if you're running for mayor then. So a different dynamic for them.
All right. Well, sticking with the topic of politics, once again this week, we're hearing more details, but also more about the cost of the Republican efforts to investigate the 2020 elections. Now, Speaker Voss says he plans to cap that at $680,000 on how much former Justice Gableman can spend in taxpayer money on the review of this election. Now, that is a dramatic different figure than what we are hearing first off. And I guess, what is your take on that, that these costs just keep going up and up, and that kind of two different people are telling us two different things?
Well, a couple of things. First, Reince Priebus, former state National Party chair, went on Steve Bannon's show and kind of started spilling the beans about this probe, saying that lawmakers already approved $680,000. It was both houses, which was not true, that their subpoenas would be going out in the coming weeks, and a couple of things that were a little dubious in terms of their truthfulness. That said, I talked to Speaker Voss on Thursday. There's going to be Assembly Org ballot, which is the committee that basically oversees assembly actions. They'll go out sometime this afternoon. That will put a cap of $680,000 on the cost. Now, Voss had already, end of July, so he's going to expand the scope of this investigation. Originally, Michael Gibbons signed a contract for $11,000 a month for 4 months, so $44,000 plus investigators. Those investigators resigned because they said it was too much for a part-time job. So now you have this new deal, in which Voss says he's going to allow Gableman to define the scope of a cyber audit. Now, or forensic audit, I should say. That has become the buzzword for everybody who wants to review 2020 on the Republican side. What is a forensic audit, right? Voss says Gableman can define it. Janelle Branchen, who had had her own investigation going on through the Assembly Elections Campaigns Elections Committee, she had her definition, which was getting the ballots and the machines, the ballots and the equipment that counted the ballots. Others who are pushing these things have other definitions, so we'll see what Gableman's definition is going to be. But what I think is interesting about this entire thing is you had three probes going on simultaneously. You had the Gableman effort, you had Branchen's effort, and Audit Bureau, all three initiated by Republicans. Branchen's effort really kind of got out of Voss's control, because remember, Branchen issued her own subpoenas to Milwaukee and Brown County saying, I want this equipment and these ballots. That put Voss in a difficult spot, right? Because you have to sign her, if you're the chief officer of the chamber, to sign her subpoenas to make them worth anything. That would have given Branchen kind of like carte blanche to go out there and get this stuff. And oh, by the way, former President Trump had already given the kind of the endorsement of her efforts.
Right.
Rewind to last weekend, Robin Voss flew in a private plane with former President Trump to Alabama for a rally, briefed him what's going on, and now we have this expansion of the Gableman probe. This seems to be Robin Voss getting back control of what's going on.
Because it was just a few weeks ago, he was stuck in the middle, right?
Yes.
He didn't want to go far, far, far towards Branchen's efforts, even kind of through her efforts, you know, kind of dismissed them about a month ago.
Yep.
And now I think he's trying to cozy back up with President Trump, hopping on a plane and them talking, you know, face to face. Because, of course, President Trump a few weeks ago even also bashed Voss that he wasn't doing enough. So Voss is trying to get back on good terms, trying to say, look, let's have a chat. This is what I'm going to do. I'm not throwing in the towel yet.
And Gableman,
but the cost just keeps going up and up.
And Gableman reports to Voss.
Mm-hmm.
So he signs the subpoenas that Gableman wants. He has control over that. There's a different dynamic than having Branchen being able to do what she wants to do. Now, Branch did try to argue a few times that there are different state statutes that she could use for subpoenas. I talked to her Thursday after speaking with Voss. She acknowledged that, yes, the law she tried to use is what she thought she could use, but it is ultimately that Robin has to sign her subpoenas to make them count. So that puts her kind of at a dead end with the subpoenas. She still holds hearings and take testimony. She can't force those guys to turn stuff over unless they want to. My impression is Brown and Milwaukee counties don't want to give Janelle Branch in their ballots.
Or their machines.
So post note to all this, so Reince Priebus, again, on Bannon's show, making these claims about the investigation, also made a claim that somehow, because definitely confined voters was a big issue for President Trump with this election. Those are voters who say they're confined because of age, illness, or infirmary. They can't get out to the polls to vote. They can have to see ballots sent to them automatically each election. They don't have to provide a photo ID with that ballot. They've claimed that there's something amiss with that. Now, there was a spike number of ballots. People claim that status in November 2020. There's also a spike in the number of absentee ballots overall. It kind of matched the increased use of absentee ballots. That said, Priebus claimed that as part of this investigation Gabelin's going to do, they're going to go and look at those ballots who are cast, people who claim that status, and review them. One problem, that's not possible. Absentee ballots in Wisconsin, whether they're cast by mail or by somebody in definitely confined status, have no unique markers on them. Mm-hmm. They're all folded. They all have the initials, clerks them. That's it. So I don't know what he's talking about in terms of like being able to dive into these ballots of these people in particular. Now, you could review ballots in general.
Right, right.
But what I'm getting at is there's all this misinformation about what's going on, and it's fueling the flames of the people who believe there's something amiss about 2020, and they're not going to, people told me this week, they're not going to accept anything that happens with these probes unless there are criminal charges, election be overturned. Now, it's not necessarily a big segment of the population, but if it's a few, 4 or 5 points of the Republican base, what are they going to do when this investigation comes back and they say, well, we believe there are problems, Dems say that investigation is flawed, but there's no overturning the election results, there's no charges, then what is going to happen? And that's going to be the next test for Robin Voss, is how does he manage that issue in the polls next fall to keep the base engaged? We did all we could. We passed these bills. They got shot down by Governor Evers. You should trust us. Have faith in the election. Still vote next fall, despite not being happy what happened in 2020.
Right, and it'll be interesting because a lot of Republicans are also looking at Arizona and what they did. But, you know, Voss has even said, too, I think that's a little too out there.
He said no private money will be used in this investigation because one of the criticisms of Arizona has been that the people who paid for it want to find fraud, therefore they'll find fraud. So that's why he's saying it's all taxpayer money for this, because he doesn't want to open that door to Democrats, who, by the way, Mark Spreitzer is still quite critical of this investigation, called an absurd waste of money of what they're doing right now.
All right, let's move on to the next topic. Senator Ron Johnson and five Republican state lawmakers visited Fort McCoy. Of course, that is the base where they are housing Afghan refugees. As of Thursday, what Ron Johnson and these Republicans were told is that there's a little over 1,000 refugees being housed there. They have a capacity of 10,000. And we're just learning more details because a lot of these things were unknown up until now. A lot of the refugees will eventually be relocated across the country. That was a concern from some Republicans that, you know, all these people are going to be spread out across Wisconsin, but that's going to be the case. But the moral of their visit and their biggest concern is that they felt that some people who are right here in Wisconsin at Fort McCoy weren't fully properly vetted. That means, you know, Ron Johnson says some don't have an ID, but even the general at the base couldn't confirm that Johnson had those concerns. But this is something that we've even heard in the national news, mm-hmm. and them continuously talk about this. I mean, they could claim this all they want, but I guess what is your take when it comes to them talking about it being a potential security threat, that, you know, some are going very extreme. Even Howard Markline, who was there, saying, you know, they could slip through the cracks and we can see another terrorist attack.
Five House members are also going to Fort McCoy today. They're trying to beat a drum, right? Mm-hmm. They're beating a drum that President Biden bungled the withdrawal from Afghanistan. He's opened the door to these possibilities coming in. They want to drive a competency narrative with the Biden administration. That's what it's all about. And also, it's noteworthy that there's a split in the Republican Party about how to address these refugees. While there are voices like Johnson, State Senator Pat Teston, saying they've got concerns that people aren't properly vetted, there are others saying, whoa, 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 this is our moral responsibility as Americans that we work with these folks during our 20-year stay in Afghanistan, we have a responsibility to help them. It's going to be interesting to watch how it plays out with Republicans going forward, about who wins out, who's the loudest voice in the Republican Party on this issue going forward. But again, go back to what's happening in Afghanistan, the tragedy with the more than a dozen Marines killed and I think 90 Afghanistan killed yesterday. Watch that. It is going to be a huge issue that it's percolating now. The question for Biden is it still percolating a year from now?
Right.
This all may die out. We may not be talking about Afghanistan 6 months from now, which is maybe unfortunate because it's a huge issue.
Right.
But politics is timing, and this is all going on now, and they want to beat that drum now while it is hot and drive a narrative about Joe Biden.
Let's actually take a listen from Senator Johnson, what he had to say and him talking about his concerns about this vetting process.
The fact that we don't know who a lot of the people are that are being transported out of Afghanistan right now. There are people being transported that don't have any ID whatsoever. But it was a point that we were making with General Guthrie and the State Department and Department of Homeland Security personnel here, is that puts an even greater burden on their shoulders to evaluate and vet and try to identify those individuals that they are going to be taking care of here. Now, I will also say that it certainly sounds like the first group are people that are just relieved to have been able to escape Afghanistan. I truly think the vast majority of the people that will be coming here, and the numbers I'm hearing are probably in the tens of thousands, the vast majority are here wanting what we want, freedom.
It's also important to note that President Joe Biden emphasized this week as well that all the refugees have been thoroughly vetted with biometric and biographic screenings to ensure their identity. So that's the rebuttal there from the Democratic side, is that they have been, everything will be fine, but it kind of just remains to be seen because there was such a rush and chaotic scene that we've seen on the television of them just trying to get people home safe. Next topic. This is, I think, a pretty fun one because I just want to say, because President Tommy Thompson just has zingers, I'm sure you know, following him for many years. But the biggest fight right now that he is picking with Republicans is that he is pushing back Republicans on JCRER and their rule that they passed about a month, or actually earlier this month, I should say, that would block their ability to enact COVID-19 policies on campus. Overall, Thompson just said, I'm not going to follow your rule. I am going, you know, bring on the lawsuits. I'm going to fight this. I'm confident we can beat the lawsuits. Let's first just hear from Tommy Thompson, his response to Senator Steve Noss, who is the co-chair of this committee, who also said he's willing to file lawsuits against Thompson.
My friend Steve Noss can make that decision, and the leadership can make their decision. I think they're making a big mistake. I think they're going to lose the battle. We got case law going back to 1895 that shows that we have the authority to run our building and, of course, to protect our students and our employees. That's what I'm doing. So I can't imagine a court in the state of Wisconsin going to say, I cannot, as president, protect my students and faculty and make sure that they're done in a safe way. If you carry it to its conclusion, if we have to pass every rule by the legislature, then the legislature is going to run the university. I don't think they want to do that. I think they want me to do it and take all the criticism, which I take.
Now, the big question here, JR, is whether or not Noss will take legal action. But, of course, he needs approval from GOP leaders. And we just heard, and you spoke to Representative Jim Steinecke, who is actually not on board with the effort of filing lawsuits.
So typically we've seen lawsuits filed by the legislature that have been by both houses. It's the Joint Committee on Legislative Organization. It's 6-4, controlled by Republicans. Jim Steinecke is a member of that committee. He tweeted out yesterday afternoon he's not a big fan of the idea of going to court, because with students returning to class for the first time for in-person learning, it'd be a confusing time and we should stick away from that. Steve Noss's aide, Mike Michelson, when I talked to him about that tweet, said that took a shot at Jim Steinecke, reminded me that the Senate can select its own action, and that Steinecke stood for freedom when it comes to putting a needle in somebody's arm, but not putting a stick up their nose or arresting kids for going to class without a mask on. That's interesting dynamic to watch that play out, the little inter-house tension. But now the question becomes, what will the Senate do? Because the Senate has its own organization committee. The Senate could on its own authorize a lawsuit. The question becomes, is the Senate GOP caucus firmly behind Steve Noss in suing the UW over this entire thing? So what would have to happen is a committee would vote. It's controlled by Republicans, all GOP leaders. As long as he has leadership on his side, you know, he can get there. The caucus will meet and talk about this. Then a lawsuit. Well, then what? Well, here's the thing. My impression is UW, all it cares about is getting past this Delta variant spike. If that lawsuit takes 6 months and they lose, they couldn't care less, because they will get through, hopefully, this spike and things will be back to normal. The whole emphasis right now is getting through this initial surge, kids coming back to class, being back on campus, hoping that this is a good incentive to drive things down and be able to breathe a sigh of relief that we're back to quote-unquote normal before too long.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you pointed that out, because even if there is a lawsuit, we know how long that takes and how long that process will go on and stretch out. You know, I think the strategy is definitely from Thompson is just let's get through this, let's get through the fall, and hopefully things will get better, just as we all hope, right? I also did want to bring up one other thing, just talking about the whole COVID thing. We've heard from Governor Evers that he might do an incentive. He actually pushed back against a vaccine incentive for a very long time. Yeah. We've seen a lot of neighboring states take this up. This week, he finally said, let's do $100 gift cards for those who get vaccinated up until Labor Day.
Yep.
You know, I guess, why do you think maybe this took him so long to do this? I mean, and is it as attractive as compared to other states? Because I know other states are doing big lotteries, but we also saw how successful his Cream Puff campaign was.
606 doses of Cream Puffs.
Yeah,
like
which
that.
Is amazing. So you never know, right?
Well, Evers announced it one day. The next day, he went to a different place to talk about something else and said he was a skeptic about the entire thing. And basically, he gave in, it's his words, gave in on the issue because he saw it happen in other places. Minnesota, for example. I think they allocated Minnesota like $2.8 million or $3.5 million for the initial surge.
Yeah.
Had to add $13 million to pay for their gift cards because people were taking advantage of it. 55,000, I think, in the end, got the shot because of that incentive. If it works, great. That seems to be Evers' attitude right now. If we can get this to start rolling, wonderful. First dose between August 20th and September 6th. So
it's a short timeline, you know? So you got to advertise it as well.
And he was asked, well, what other people got vaccinated before this? What do you tell them? And he said, well, basically we tell you thank you. You do what you're supposed to do. We appreciate it. So you're out of luck if you didn't get it, you got it done before August 20th. But it's $100, so we'll see how that works.
All right. Let's move on to, of course, this week also marked the anniversary of the Kenosha police officer shooting of Jacob Blake and just the overall uprising over police reform. Let's just first talk about what Governor Evers had to say when he was focusing on Jacob Blake and the two protesters who were shot by Kyle Rittenhouse. This was a statement. Kathy and I are thinking of Jacob and his loved ones, as well as families and friends of Joseph and Anthony today. We ask Wisconsinites to join us in extending our prayers for peace and healing. Senator Van Wangard, who is a former racing police officer, said this, Governor Evers' initial comments following the incident were so over the top and so out of line, so inflammatory that they did more inciting rioting than calm. You know, this is the same kind of attitude, rhetoric that we've heard from Republicans, that Governor Evers didn't handle the Kenosha protests well. It's going to be a big issue for his reelection campaign. What do you think of this sticking point, and how impactful can it be against Evers? Because a lot of people are pretty upset of how it all unfolded.
Governor Evers' three biggest challenges next fall are Kenosha, the unemployment insurance debacle, and Joe Biden. The last one he has no control over, right? Because the party in part of the White House struggles with interim elections has been that way for decades. It's been pretty pronounced in Wisconsin since 2006. So that's going to be a challenge for him, number one, which is why Joe Biden's numbers dropping below positive territory this week is a concern for any Democrat, let alone Tony Evers. Luckily for Evers, he's got a year to see the Biden's numbers rebound, that kind of thing. UI, we talked about that issue ad nauseum. You know, there are definitely some missteps there. Kenosha is being relitigated essentially right now. And why I say that is Republicans want to drive home a narrative that Tony Evers dropped the ball. Now, if you go back and talk to the governor's office, they will tell you that they got the first call from local officials in the early morning hours. So it happened on a Sunday night. Early Monday morning, they got a call. They moved immediately. they mobilize the Guard, which National Guard troops don't just sit around waiting for, like, a call. They have to mobilize, come in, and go out. They were there by the next night and upped it every night at the request of locals. And that everything locals asked for, they did. Republicans keep pointing out it was 125 troops the first night, 250 the next, then to 500. They didn't take the help that President Trump had offered, that they didn't act quickly enough. If you pull back from all the politics of it, Evers did what locals asked. Somebody else may have said, look, I'm seeing what you're asking for, but you need more, and done it on his own or tried to work to encourage him to ask for more. That said, that's a long conversation to have. All we care about are 30-second TV ads. And those 30-second ads are going to show flames. They're going to be interspersed with people talking about how their businesses were burned down, violence in the streets. That's a potent issue if people still remember it and care about it. Now, the people in Kenosha,
they
are definitely going to care. The people in Kenosha still remember that Scott Walker turned down a casino while he was running for president, basically, in Iowa. Well, he's courting Iowa conservatives while running for president and turned down a casino down there. That didn't help him in 2018. This is not going to help Governor Evers in 2022. The question is how much. Again, relitigating things, we had an assembly hearing this week about a riot bill. So Wisconsin does not define a riot in state statute. I mean, if you do so, if you commit vandalism, that's a crime, right? So there's been a bill that's been around for several years to define a riot in state law, to add penalties for it. If you block traffic, for example, there'd be a new penalty for that. Just so happened, a public hearing this week about that bill.
The timeliness of it, of course.
Just so happened that two people testified are from Kenosha, business owners. Just so happens that there's a group called Empower Wisconsin, a conservative group, doing TV ads against Evers about Kenosha. The first guy that testified is in one of the TV ads. I'm sure it's all coincidence. That said, they're trying to drive that narrative again of Evers dropped the ball on Kenosha. It's a competency issue, just like Biden in Afghanistan. Republicans are going to drive a competency issue right now, Democrats, and say they're not running things well. You can't trust them.
And speaking of that hearing, we do have from those two business owners. We'll take a listen from what they had to say when they testified.
We went to work like any other day, saw what had happened the night before after the night of the day that Jacob Blake was shot. We were making deliveries and such, and then we were notified that, listen, come 3 o'clock, you guys, it'd be a good idea if you close your store and go home. It might be unsafe here. These three people right here in this picture, if you guys like to see it, I can bring it to you. They were in our store intentionally starting a fire. I called the fire department and said, hey, you guys, our store's on fire. Fire department knows who we are. We sell office furniture to them. They said, we can't get down there. There's nothing we can do. It's unsafe. When they were trying to get there, as time passed, our store eventually went from that small fire to this, where the footprint that was left after the fire was just a footprint.
A 60-year-old friend of ours who was just trying to keep the flames out of one building, who was hit upside the head with a glass bottle. I watched him fall to the ground, unconscious, bleeding from the mouth. And a good Samaritan dragged him to the other side of the street. He made it through. He had to have reconstructive jaw surgery and such, which I've had as well, and it is no picnic. That first night, and then certainly the second, the law and order was well outnumbered. It was 3-2. By the third night, I mean, there were more people that were rioting than live in Kenosha.
Now, of course, that's what we heard about the riot bill, but even police reform legislation is still going to get some traction. Governor Evers did sign some, and we're probably going to see that issue, just police reform in general, still being talked about in, you know, next year and in the upcoming elections. All right, JR, that's it. For now, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm JR Ross.
Thanks for joining us.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.